All right, at this time, the chairperson should briefly qualify. I don't know if I was supposed to read that out loud, but requirements for chairing a meeting at the Central Orlando Group Saturday night speakers meeting are 1 year of continuous sobriety, have Central as your home group, and attend a group conscious meeting. My name is Sylvia. I'm a grateful alcoholic. I've met these requirements, and I was completely nervous until I got here, and I remembered how I basically used to stutter, not just behind podiums, but literally I just was so incredibly uncomfortable talking to people because I was always scared that they would know my little secret, because it got to be harder and harder for me to just put up that facade of everything's okay. And the more that I felt that it was getting wearisome for me to pretend everything was okay, I justified that that's why I should drink. And I basically became a daily drinker, not just at night, but I would wake up in the morning feeling so bad that yet again I could not stop drinking, that the only way I could even start my day was by drinking some more. And I'd constantly hear, you know, you're such a nice girl. How come, you know, I was that person that no one could ever figure out why I couldn't just quite get it. Never finished school. I don't think I ever lasted more than a year and a half at a job. So I don't know. I just basically, I kind of heard about AA. And I'm eternally grateful today that I finally admitted to myself that I'm an alcoholic. I had enough issues when I first came in, and I'm like, the last thing I want to do is add another label. And it wasn't until I realized that, you know what, I have a problem. And the amazing thing about this program is it offers a solution. And my sobriety date is February 26, 2011, and my life has changed immensely. And I definitely learned the hard way that these suggestions really should be followed, because there's a difference between sobriety and abstinence. And if you're just not drinking and you're not working on the program, life isn't as wonderful as it can be. And so after consistently following the suggestions, I get to start nursing school next month. And that's something that I've been trying for, you know, 12 years off and on, because apparently I always joke, studying and drinking don't mix. I never finished. So I'm just really grateful to be here chairing, and still a little nervous, but I don't think I stuttered that much, so that's a good start. But we're going to go ahead and continue. With Okay, hold on. The group has asked me to remind you to please make sure your phones are off and refrain from moving around or talking while the speaker's sharing, unless you really have to go to the bathroom, I'll understand. But I'd like to introduce an amazing person. I used to go to another group, and when I first started coming to Central and realizing how important the suggestions of working with other alcoholics and definitely how important service work was, I remember coming to a Sunday beginners meeting, and the chairperson was just extremely beautiful, bright, and glowing. I've got this thing for women in sobriety that didn't come out right, but there's this thing for women in sobriety. My first meeting. It's just the radiance and glow that I see radiate from women in sobriety is something that I've always strived for, and this person, regardless of whatever it is that she's going through, she has this consistency that I think is vital, where newcomers can strive to that, and she, for service work, she's always there, and there's been times when I've seen that maybe she didn't want to be there, but she was there, and I respect that so much, and she was one of the few people that I'd actually keep calling when it was suggested I call people every day, and I enjoyed the conversations that I had with her, and I'm really proud to say that the person that's speaking tonight is phenomenal, and hold on, I didn't want to stutter, but basically, she's someone that definitely walks the walk, and she walks the talk, whatever the expression is. There's a lot of people that perhaps say these are certain things you should do in the program, but she consistently shows how the program can work in her life, and she is constantly helping other people with the people that she sponsors and whatnot, and she's beautiful inside and out, and with utter gratitude, I'd like to introduce Jacqueline.
Jacqueline, I'm an alcoholic. Oh, my sobriety date is April 5th, 2003, and that's by the grace of God and Alcoholics Anonymous. And I'm very nervous, so I'll just, I'll try not to stutter, so that could happen. We're still my coffee. All right, so, okay, so I, my goal is just to tell you what it was like, what happened, and what it's like now. And if I can just reach one person the way I was reached at my first meeting, it wasn't a speaker meeting, but then, you know, then God will have worked through me in the way that he planned. So I was born and raised here, well, not born here, but raised here in Central Florida, just from a, you know, middle-class family. And I was not one of those drinkers that started drinking at a very young age. I didn't really like alcohol. It took a lot of work for me to get in the groove of that. But when I was growing up, we moved a lot, and my parents were divorced at a very early age, so my mom raised us by herself with the help of my grandparents, and my mother was unstable at best. I know now through the help of Alcoholics Anonymous and Al-Anon. Al-Anon is a part of my story today, which I'm grateful for, that she did the best that she could. But we moved around a lot. We in and out of my grandparents' home. And so from an early age, you know, I learned to manipulate, to lie, to stuff my feelings. I'm a great stuffer, and I learned to run. And I'm a fast runner. So those were my my coping mechanisms. As I, you know, the more work that I do, the more I realize how much those things were prevalent in my life early on, even before I picked up a drink. So I didn't really have, you know, anything tragic happen in my childhood, thankfully, other than just instability. So when we moved a lot, you know, I always felt like I didn't fit in. I never felt good enough. I never felt like we had enough money, you know, never felt pretty enough, never had, you know, enough friends. And so I was kind of a loner until I got to high school. And then I discovered, other things than alcohol, and that is part of my story too, but out of respect for AA, I'll kind of keep that, you know, toned down. And that's probably when I started using things to, make myself, feel better, excuse me, you know, or escape, or just, you know, feel a part of and fit in. And, That didn't work out real well. Excuse me. I was asked to leave the high school that I went to, Winter Park High School, and they asked me to leave early and not to return for my senior year. So I graduated from Seminole Community College, the adult high school, and that was great because we only went to school 4 days a week, and it was from like 8 to 12, and then we would go to the beach and do our thing, you know. And so I don't know how I graduated, but I do have the diploma. I actually found it a couple of weeks ago digging through some papers. I was like, oh, there it is. So like I knew I had it. I'm glad nobody had asked for it. So that takes me to about, you know, what, 18 or 19. And about that time, I discovered alcohol in a way that I learned to drink it to where I could get this effect that alcohol produced in me, and I could drink a lot of it. And the only problem with that was is that I always did something tragic and could never remember it the next day, or hoped I didn't remember it the next day. And that started, you know, pretty much immediately when I started really getting into the groove of drinking. I would drink, and I would black out, and I would wake up in places that, you know, I didn't belong or didn't know how I had gotten there. And I thought that I was just, at that point, I was probably in my early 20s, and I thought I was just, you know, running with the wrong crowd, and I had these other issues going on, other substances, and I thought, if I could just get away from, you know, this group of people, that I would be okay. So I moved over to Madeira Beach with my uncle and did my first geographic cure. So that worked for a little while, but while I was there, I was in the ballroom dance business, and that was great because it lent to drinking, because there was always the party for the newcomer in a different way, you know, to get, you know, to reel them in, to get them to buy dance lessons, you know, and there was alcohol served, you know, so we would, you know, start drinking early, and that, you know, that worked for a while too. But as with most of us, at least for me, you know, I always was able to find that person that had that other thing that I really liked to do to go along with the alcohol. So that didn't, you know, that didn't work well for long. I was there for about a year and a half, and so then we did, I was living with my uncle, like I said, and we did another geographic change over to Ocala. And Slocala is what we used to call it, because there was nothing there but horses and bars, country bars, and then the dance business. So continued on with that for a little bit longer. And again, it didn't take long for me to fall in with that crowd that I just needed to get away from. So I did another geographic change, came back to Orlando, and thought, you know, I just need to get my life together. So I moved back here, and that was probably in the early 90s, and I was working, and I was working two jobs, and I was, you know, everything was going along okay, you know, still on the weekends, you know, finding myself in that same, you know, situation, that pitiful and horrible, I mean, you know, I can't even talk, the demoralizing, you know, I can't, sorry. But it was, you know, it was just the same thing over and over again. And I'm so nervous, I'm sorry. So anyway, I was able to maintain my job and work and just, you know, get away with the, my weekend started early because I'm a dental assistant and we don't work on Fridays. So my weekend began on Thursday. And that it was on, you know, Thursday night through Sunday, and I was just, you know, constant, you know, I would drink, I would go to sleep, I would wake up, I would drink, and I would go to sleep, and that's how it went for a long time. And I got married in 1994, and I thought, you know, that couldn't hurt, you know, maybe kind of settle down, except my husband was kind of in the same mode I was in, and there was a lot more, you know, drinking and carrying on. So I never really thought that alcohol was my problem. I always thought it was, you know, somebody else. I thought it was my marriage. I thought it was my parents, or lack thereof, or that, you know, my boss wasn't treating me right. You know, my friends were not good to me, and all of these things that were happening to me were just a result of everything but alcohol. Though it did seem to be the common denominator. When I grew up, everybody drank. It was just, you know, normal, and so I didn't really think that was a problem. I mean, that for me was just, you know, the way it was. You drank, you got drunk, you fought, you know, you had parties, and, you know, things just went on, and that's just the way that it was. So it didn't really seem to be totally unnatural that that's the way that I was living my life. So I started to have some more serious consequences. I was taken to jail one time for public intoxication in the Houston airport, and that was not, you know, not a good experience, but it, you know, I just kind of, you know, checked it off to, well, you know, I just had a little too much to drink, I don't like to fly, and I got a little upset, and they took me to jail, and it was really, you know, kind of a misunderstanding, and it was just, you know, not a big deal, and I just, you know, you know, I won't do that again. So, you know, on the way home, I, you know, kind of toned it down, I didn't drink so much, because I was afraid of going back to jail, because that was not fun, and I did not like that at all. So, but, you know, it didn't occur to me to, you know, quit drinking. That was never on the horizon and never anything that I was interested in. I didn't really think it was that big of a deal. So, you know, I continued, you know, to go on. And so as I approached, I guess, you know, my bottom, I just, you know, I was drinking to just not feel anything because I was just so unhappy. And I would walk in the door from work and my purse would still be on my shoulder and I would grab the bottle of vodka out of the freezer and I would pour my drink before I even crossed the threshold of my kitchen. And I would drink every night until I went to sleep. And then I would get up and I would go to work somehow. And this process just, you know, kept going and going. Right before I got sober, it was suggested to me that, you know, maybe I should, you know, go to an AA meeting and that I might want to quit drinking because I had an incident where I had my nephews in the car and I was driving in a blackout and I drove the wrong way down the exit ramp on I-4 and blew out my tires and ended up in my house somehow with my nephews crying in the back seat and I was passed out in the front. And, you know, somebody suggested that it would be a good idea if I quit drinking. And I just really, you know, I went and I left and I thought, you know, that's not for me. I'm not, you know, I just won't drink as much, you know, and tried to control my drinking for a couple of weeks. And then it was just back, you know, back to normal, what my normal was, which was a lot of vodka. So, it finally, you know, got to the point. My husband traveled a lot at that time, and so he was out of the country for like 6 weeks, and he had just been home and for a week, and then he left, and I got really drunk one night, and thought it would be a good idea to call my boss's wife and rip her a new one about something. She was the office manager where I worked, and she terrorized us at work, and I don't remember the phone conversation. I just know that I didn't have a job the next day, and I was very scared at this point because when I drank, you know, the second thing that I did after getting a buzz was leave and go downtown, and it did, and the, you know, all bets were off, and sometimes I would come home and sometimes I wouldn't, and this was really not acceptable behavior for a married woman, but you know, I just didn't care. I was going to have fun and it didn't really matter to me what the consequences were. I just kept doing it. I was going to have fun and I didn't see what was wrong with that. So my husband had just left to go back to Japan, and I had been fired, and I knew that I was in a lot of trouble, that I didn't know how I was going to explain that to my husband, and I got, you know, just super, super drunk. I took some medication, and I called my sister, and I told her that, you know, I thought I was done. You know, I was ready to go. I was just tired of living the way I was living. I was miserable and I was done. So she called the ambulance and they came in the house and they wanted to know what was wrong with me and this and that. And I told them that I was fine. That what are you doing here? And so I told them, I said, you know, really, I just want to die. Well. Click, click, right to the bed. Great. Not a good thing to tell the paramedics. So I was officially Baker acted. That really did not sit well with me. So I was taken to the Florida hospital emergency room where I could be monitored by the police after they filled me full of charcoal and all kinds of weird stuff. And if you've ever had that happen, you know what happens after that. It's not pretty, mm-hmm. and it's not great to have this man standing there while all this is going on. So I decided I was going to leave. I just didn't feel like being there. I wanted to go home, get in my own bed, and I was worried about my dog. So I took the IVs out of my arm and slipped out of the emergency room. And then off I went. And so I ran home all the way to my house from the emergency room, darting in and out of bushes. It was ridiculous. You know, a video of that would probably be good. I don't know. Because all I had on was a hospital gown. So anyway, and so I finally got home, only to find that my house had been locked up. And of course I had nothing with me but my gown. And but we had an old house in College Park, and there was a window that I knew that didn't shut right, and so I was able to crawl in the house and all that. So I finally got inside, and I called my sister, and she said, "What are you doing home?" And I said, "Well, I left the hospital." And she said, "Well, you're Baker Acted. You can't leave." And I said, "Well, I left." And she said, "Well, the police are going to be looking for you." And I'm like, "Well, don't tell them where I am." I was just like, please, you know, and so now I'm even more scared, and I was just like, you know, Rebecca, if I can just get some sleep, you know, can we deal with this in the morning? I said, you know, please, you know, don't tell him anything. So she promised me she wouldn't, and there I was in this gown in my house, and I'm Baker Acted, but now I'm a fugitive, and there, you know, there on my my dining room table or my coffee table was, you know, my glass of vodka, just as I had left it, you know, probably, I don't know how long I had been gone, I'm sure 12 hours or so. And I just looked at it, and, you know, I didn't want to drink it because I think it was probably God doing for me what I couldn't do for myself, you know, looking back, but I was so tired. It had been a long, you know, long 24 hours, I think, and I just really did want to rest in my own bed. So I went to bed. And I got up, and I called my sister, and now I'm really in trouble because now they've called my husband, and now he's got to fly back from Japan because I've been Baker Acted, and all this stuff is going on. The police are looking for me. So I called my mom, and I said, "Can you come get me? And I need to, you know, kind of hide out at the house for a couple of days." I didn't know what I was doing. I just said, you know, "I just need to come to the house until Scott gets home, and then, you know, we'll get this all figured out." So So she came and got me, and I called the hospital to tell them that I needed to come back, and I wanted to be sure that they weren't going to arrest me when I got there and take me to jail, because I was also afraid that they were going to take me to jail before they brought me back to the hospital. So they promised me that they wouldn't. So I went back, and, you know, once they got my blood pressure stabilized and all that good stuff, you know, they moved me over to the not ward is what I call it. I don't know what it is. The mental health facility over there where I had to stay for the 72 hours or whatever it is. And while I was there, you know, that wasn't a great place to be either. They take your shoelaces and everything. And it's like, I really thought it was an overreaction. But nevertheless, there I was. And so, you know, I did everything they wanted me to do because I just wanted to leave. I just wanted to go home. And I told them, you know, they wanted me to go to outpatient therapy. I said, "I'll go, you know, if I can just get home, you know, I'll call around and I'll get plugged in somewhere. And you need intense inpatient therapy." And I'm just, okay, I'll go. Just, I need to go home. So as I was talking to the doctor that was going to sign my paper so that I could leave, he recommended that I come to Alcoholics Anonymous, and that if I didn't, that he would either see me back very shortly or I would die. And I thought, well, he doesn't really even know me. You know, I mean, I'd only been there once. It's not like I was a repeat customer. I mean, but, you know, I think I was scared enough that, you know, I kind of filed that away in the back of my head, and my husband picked me up and we went home, and I thought, well, you know, maybe I should go to an AA meeting, and I looked it up online, and I came. I came straight here, you know, from, you know, being out in a couple of hours. And this was back when the was the old house over there, and George was working at the coffee bar, and it was, the house kind of looked like it was falling apart, and the meeting guide had said there was like a 3 o'clock meeting, and I pulled in and there was nobody here. And I went around back and went in the coffee bar, and of course I was terrified, and there was nobody there except George and Marion. So I went in and they told me that the meeting guide wasn't accurate anymore and that there wasn't a meeting until 8 o'clock. And I was like, oh, okay. And I said, well, you know, I'll come back at 8 o'clock. And she said, okay, are you sure you're going to come back? I'm like, oh yeah, I'll come back. And I remember Marion, you know, she was so sweet. And I said to her, I said, you know, what do I do if I want a drink before, you know, I come back at 8 o'clock? And she said, call me. And she gave me her phone number, their little card, the crochet lady. And so I went home. Of course, I didn't call her. And but I did come back. I did come back to the 8 o'clock meeting. I sat in the back. I didn't think anybody would know I was new. I did not raise my hand and say that I was new or that I wanted help. I came to the meeting and then I left. They told me to come back, so I was out of a job, so I came back the next day. And little bits of hope, I guess, were planted in me because I did keep coming back. It took me, a couple of days to like raise my hand and say I was new, and just, I guess reach out to anybody, though I was sure, now knowing what I know now, everybody knew I was new. And I just kept coming back. But that's all I was doing, is just coming to meetings, and I was going home, but I wasn't drinking. I think something important, I guess I forgot, was that while I was in that mental ward, I can remember, like, I think the second night there that, really literally crying out to God, please help me. And I don't know why. I'm not a religious person. I didn't really have any of that upbringing, but for some reason that, that just had come out of me, and I don't know why, but I do remember saying that, just God help me. And so I'm sure that is the reason that I'm sober today, just God's grace. So I came to the meetings, and I started coming to the 6:30 a.m. meeting, and then I would come to the 8 o'clock meeting. And I finally got the courage to ask a woman to help me, because I was getting to the point that if I didn't do something, I was afraid that I was going to drink. So I asked a woman to be my sponsor, and she took me through the first couple of steps, and then she said that she couldn't sponsor me anymore. It was very early on, and I was a little confused by that, but I just kept coming. And there was another woman, her name was Connie, and she used to chair the Wednesday night Big Book meeting. And I asked her to be my sponsor. And so she took me through all the steps of Alcoholics Anonymous. I got sober in April, and then in August, however long that is, my mom died suddenly out of the blue. And that was a very weird place to be that early in sobriety. And I can remember being on the phone with my sponsor all the way. I got the call at work, and so I drove to her house, and I can remember being on the phone with her the whole time because I was so afraid I was going to drink, and I just kept saying, Connie, I don't want to drink. I don't want to drink. She goes, you're going to be fine. And she talked to me all the way until I got to my mom's house. And where I met my sister, and you do the things that you do when that happens. So that was a pretty monumental thing for me. I think that was really my first spiritual experience, because I thought if I can stay sober through my mom dying, then I can probably stay sober through anything else. I mean, that was a big thing. My sister is also in the program. She got sober the June following me, so we are sober about the same length of time. And so for both of us, that was a pretty big deal that we were able to stay sober through that. And when everything was said and done, you know, we kind of looked at each other and was like, you know, what do you want to do? And so we need to go to a meeting. And so we came straight to Central for the 8 o'clock meeting that night. And that's what I've learned here, is that no matter what's going on, you know, my ass has fallen off, I put it in a bag and I bring it up here. And I don't have to be okay to be here. And this is the first place that I learned that, and that I've ever known that I don't have to be okay to be here. So I continued to roll along in my sobriety and work the steps, and then I got pregnant in like September or something, and I was just like, what is going on? It was a very busy year, you know, so I was sober, and then my mom passed away, and then I was pregnant, and I was just like, oh my God, what is going on? And so so there was a little delay in me finishing my steps right away. So I did not really finish my steps until my second year of sobriety, but I did get into service right away. I think when I was 3 or 4 months sober, somebody invited me to the group conscience meeting, and I didn't know what it was, and the next thing I knew, I was the recording secretary for the group, and that was quite an experience, and I did that for, I don't know, I think like 7 years, and I learned a lot. And if you have never been to a group conscience meeting, I invite you to come out. It's quite an experience, and it's a good way to find out the inner workings of what's going on in the group. So as my sobriety continued, you know, it came time for me to sponsor other women. And I was very nervous about that. I didn't think that I would do it right. I didn't know how to do it. And that's why you have a sponsor. And I have a sponsor who has a sponsor. And so I began to help other women. And one of the first women that I helped is, you know, sitting in this room tonight. And for me, working with another woman and seeing, you know, somebody else get it and be able to pass that message along was something unlike anything I've ever experienced. You know, when I did my fourth and fifth step with my sponsor, it was the first time that I was able to talk to somebody about the things that I had done and know that I wasn't being judged and there wasn't going to be a penalty to be paid, you know, that I was going to be able to get through this, find out what, you know, what the causes and conditions of my behavior were so that, you know, that I could move on. And helping another woman do that has been, you know, I think instrumental in keeping me sober. I also chaired a lot of meetings. I always like to have a meeting, and I feel like if I'm not in service, then, you know, then my sobriety is probably not exactly where it should be. So I just wanted to talk about Al-Anon for a minute because it is part of my story. And this year, you know, it had been recommended to me right off the bat that I go to Al-Anon. My husband is an active drinker and has been almost the entire time that I've been sober. And so, but I never wanted to go to Al-Anon because I didn't think it was for me. I didn't want to go to something else that, you know, I went to enough meetings. I didn't need another one. And so I think like with alcohol, when I got in enough pain and I needed some relief, you know, I was driven there, you know, on my knees. Literally. And And I can say that that has been a very healing process for me. And what I thought Al-Anon was to learn how to fix the alcoholic, oddly enough. And it is, it's fixing this alcoholic. And it has taught me that, you know, that I have choices that I didn't know that I had. And I mean, I have worked with Steps in Alcoholics Anonymous, and I have worked them more than on one occasion. And Al-Anon has helped me identify and work on things that the Steps of Alcoholics Anonymous haven't, though the steps are the same. So it's very interesting. And so I am grateful for my Al-Anon sponsor who helps me walk through the difficulties that I have day to day that are different than what I have in my AA life. So, you know, no matter what's going on with me, I know that a drink is not the solution to my problem. When I got here, I had no intentions of staying here. I really thought I would just come, I would get a little heat off, I'd get a job, and then I was going to be gone. You know, I had no plans on staying sober, certainly not for this long. I mean, I just didn't know that there could be any other life than drinking. I mean, how much fun was I going to have? I mean, I just thought, you know, this is going to be boring, and I would sit in the back of the meetings in that old building and say, I hate this place. I do not want to be here, and as soon as this meeting is over, I'm going to Wally's. And I would say that, and I meant it. And you know, this was very early on, you know, probably my first 90 days. And but you know, I would stay, and I would feel better, and I would drive home, and I would drive right by Wally's, and then I would drive right by Florida Hospital, and then I would go home. And I drove by Florida Hospital probably every day for a year. Because I wanted to remember what that was like when I was running from the hospital and the insanity that that was and where I had come from. I did not want to forget how I felt. So, you know, I come when I'm feeling good and I come when I'm not feeling good. And the women in this program have helped me walk through things that I didn't think I could get through. A drink has certainly passed through my mind from time to time, but I've never picked up a drink, and I'm grateful for that because I think that I could drink again, but I don't know if I could get sober again, and that is a frightening thing. I mean. Especially, I work with, seems like a lot of girls that I work with have relapsed, and that never matters to me. I think that we need every drink that we have before we're willing to get sober and do what we have to do to get sober. So I don't care how many times somebody goes in and goes out. You know, when they're ready, they're ready. And so I have the privilege of working with these girls and knowing that, you know, that it's hard to come back. And I always admire somebody that comes in, you know, that says, one, that they're new, because I never did that, and I was always terrified of that, or somebody that comes back and said, you know, I'm here, and I'm back, and I'm always so grateful, especially at the newcomers meeting. So I chair the newcomers meeting right now, and I love it. I think it's my favorite meeting. It's so great to see people grow, see people come in, the first day, and you know, they're shaking and they're nervous, and I can remember what that feels like, and to see them, you know, go month and month and month and just get better and better and better, and it's such a privilege to get to watch that. I don't like to say Alcoholics Anonymous saved my life, you know. It gave me a life beyond my wildest dreams because I didn't want the life that I had before, and I'm glad that I am not the same person because with the help of a sponsor and working the steps, I am not the same person that I was when I came in here. I do believe that the same person will drink again, and I know that if I hadn't had this psychic change as a result of the steps and had this emotional rearrangement in me that I would certainly have drank again. I've seen that firsthand recently, that if you come in and you don't do the work and you just don't drink, then you will drink again. I mean, that has been my experience with somebody close that I dearly love. And it's, you know, it's hard. It's hard to watch somebody, you know, not get it. But, you know, one day, if somebody's supposed to get sober, they'll get sober. And that's not any of my business. That's between God and that person. And so I'm grateful to be here, to be a member of the Central Orlando group. And I think I'm done. I know it's a little early.